And the reason why I want to mention BEPS is BEPS is not focused on higher education. But unfortunately, higher education is getting pulled into the conversation just by nature, because a lot of universities today, even if you just have study abroad programs, you are a global organization, whether you categorize yourself as such or not. And BEPS is having quite an impact on the interpretation of something we call permanent establishment, which I'll just kind of give you a quick definition of, is would be a foreign country's determination that you have a fixed place of business in their country, and therefore they would expect you to report your activities of what you're doing in their country. So, and there's really kind of two areas of PE that we'll be touching on in different aspects of the discussion today. One is around this concept of agency PE, which is essentially if you're working with another organization, a local organization in a foreign country, the nature of the relationship that you have with them may be something that is still creating a permanent establishment for your university, even if you have a partner organization. And secondly is around the BEPS influence is around limiting some of the exceptions to permanent establishment. So making it a little more strict than it's been in the past and or defining it more strictly than it's been in the past.
And one place that you'll want to go to look at permanent establishment and understand it better are the treaties, because it is a treaty concept. And so the treaties will have a clause that is titled permanent establishment. They're all very similar, but what we found is that despite what's written in the treaty, each country will interpret that in a different way.
Yeah, thanks, Julia. And treaties for the U.S. anyway cover about 70 countries. PE is still something that would be written in local law, not only for treaty countries, but also for non-treaty countries. So PE is a concept that is universal, but as Julia mentioned, it's defined typically in Article 5 of the treaties. And, you know, just like we were saying with BEPS, that it's not focused on higher education. Similarly, treaty language is not written with colleges and universities in mind. It is written in commercial business in mind. But it certainly still applies to colleges and universities as well. Okay, this is just a visual of the elements of PE, nothing more than just kind of help lay it out for you a little bit differently. And again, the two areas that are really becoming more of a focus now under the fixed place of business of determination of PE, the preparatory or auxiliary activities and what gets defined as not being PE has been narrowing. And similarly with agency, kind of the determination of whether or not an organization would be considered a dependent agent versus an independent agent has also become a little stricter. I don't know, Roshan, do you have any comments on India in regard to kind of evolving PE?
Yeah, I think so. So I think generally the historic understanding of the permanent establishment rule was significant heavy lifting and presence in country, right? So it was a huge branch office or maybe having 10, 20 employees on the ground. But I think over the past 5 or 10 years, we've been journeying through sort of a significantly different understanding of what the permanent establishment concept itself is. And just to share maybe a couple of quick examples of cases intuitively that we would believe should not create a permanent establishment, but because of how countries now view the rule and interpret the rule. One example we've seen often with not-for-profit universities is you have a single employee who's working not out of a physical formal presence of the university, but out of the residence of that employee, right? So we see that in the Indian context often where, for instance, the employee needs to travel back to India to spend maybe a couple of months or 3 or 4 months, and the individual's working out of his or her home, right? And India, for instance, views the home office itself as possibly a permanent establishment of the university, which intuitively we don't own that premises, and therefore we don't believe that premises should be regarded as a PE. And I think another development of late has been really short duration activities, right? So for instance, 10 years back, if you asked any consultant, we would say you've got to be in country for 6 months at least optically to create a permanent establishment. But India again has started, for instance, in one court ruling has held that a permanent establishment was created even with 3 weeks of presence of folks in country. So I think in that sense, we'll have to relook at how we were interpreting the rule, not significant heavy lifting activity in country, but even stray instances.
And I think what we're seeing is that, as we've seen in other presentations, the law is having trouble catching up with technology. And so, you know, maybe in the past, you really couldn't do business with India unless you were physically present there. But now there are all kinds of services that can be provided through the web. And so countries are starting to think, well, you know, in the past, you would have to put an office in the country. But now you're doing the exact same thing, but you're doing it outside of our country. So we still want your taxes.
Yeah. Another example, too, of just this area evolving is China issued something that's known now as Bulletin 11 almost exactly a year ago. And that defined, you know, a relationship that a U.S. university might have, not specific to U.S., but a foreign university would have with a Chinese institution, and defining that would constitute a permanent establishment. And there's certainly a lot of interpretation that's still open with that, but it certainly defined it a lot more narrowly than it had previously.